I can't.
We didn't even start yet.
I know.
I missed last time. I'll put
it. Yeah.
Did you get the reference that I sent you on the story of Leia?
Yes. Yes, it's interesting.
Vicky had heard about it before, too. Okay. I mean, it's not a secret.
So, last time we talked about the marriage of Yaakov and Leia, and we ended up talking about Rachel for more than we should have, just because that was this week's class. But it's hard to avoid it, right? Because
is there any heat in this room at all?
It should be out. Yeah, it is cold. Cool.
And you're in a sweater. I'm in three layers. I have a shirt layer under this. This is cashmere. This is another layer.
You guys don't know what cold is.
Oh, you know what?
It's been freezing every morning.
It's so hot today.
It's been freezing. I get up in the morning, I'm like cold, I can see my own breath. It's like,
our youngest son, you know, he said, Mom, please don't discuss cold with us. They're, you know, he's lived in that Boston area for all the years.
Yeah, Boston's.
Now he's here, you know, I mean, LA.
Okay,
still cold there too.
So we talked a lot about Yaakov and Leia last time, and the basic theme of Leia's marriage with Yaakov is it's a very slow starting relationship, right? It's a relationship that takes a long time to develop. It almost has the feel of like an arranged marriage in the shtetl. You know, it's just two people who...
Yeah, because she was always having kids, and she had kids.
Well, I mean, initially, it's a forced marriage. That was where I was going with that.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. The kids part is true, but it was a forced marriage. They, you know, it wasn't like something they chose, and they kind of had to make the best of it, you know? So I kind of picture it that way a little bit. And the fact that Rachel is around makes Leia's life in some ways much harder because she's always being compared to her. And it seems that Rachel is a hard person to be compared to. Leia lives her life always, you know, striving for something, wanting something that isn't really there. Basically, Yaakov's affection. That, you know, the way she names her children, the way she... you know, just looks at life as a whole. In the beginning, she's really, really resentful, and then it takes time, slowly but surely, she kind of comes to grips with the reality of the situation, and over time is able to make the best of it, right? And then by the end of her life, she is the one who's really with Yaakov. She's the one who's buried with Yaakov. She's the one who lives out her days with Yaakov, and she's the one whose kids are the ones that remain the most prominent tribes, right? Judah and Levi, the tribes that really exist today are from her. But it's not an easy process. It's a very long, slow, painful process that kind of gets them to that point. Rachel is the opposite, right? Rachel starts off with a flash. The relationship starts off with a flash, and then has a very unsatisfying ending, right? In some ways, the entire relationship is unsatisfying. And, not the entire relationship, that's not fair, but there's a longing in their relationship that isn't there. So, almost start from the beginning. And the first question I'm grappling with is, why is Yaakov so enamored with Rachel? Because she's gorgeous, but that doesn't usually last that long, right? You know, someone who is obsessed, you know, a man who is in love with a woman because of her looks, that's not going to last a lifetime. That's not going to last past her death. Very unlikely. There has to be something more there at some point. Yes?
I read a book called Love and Limerence once, and it talked about how that if you don't really ever get the person, and the way you want, there's a longing that's set up.
Okay, that's a good point. So you're saying that there's that Yaakov's intensity for Rachel is never really matched by Rachel, right? That could be a big part of it. Is that for Yaakov? There's this constant longing, It's not that she's playing hard to get, but she just doesn't seem to long for him as much as he longs for her.
Well, right? From the very minute they met, he wanted her.
Right, exactly.
She didn't have to work
was
for
that?
Him.
Right. Unrequited love?
Unrequited love, yeah. I mean, it's not that she doesn't love him. Right, it's not that she doesn't love him. It's not that
as much as she loves him.
Yeah, it's just the intensity does not seem to be equal. Uh-huh. Right? And I think that's a good point. I think that's a part of this, is that... So where does Yaakov's intensity come from? That's what I'm trying to understand. Where does Yaakov's intensity come from? Why is he so enamored with her? It's not so clear. She's beautiful, but, you know, Rivka is beautiful. Yitzchak isn't enamored with her. Sarah is beautiful, but it's not the same kind of thing. What is it about Rachel that's so, you know, that drives Yaakov for his entire life till the day he dies, right? And I talked about this the Shabbos, right? That see, Brittany misses Shabbos, and you know, you never know what you're gonna miss here.
Yeah,
never know. So what I said about the Shabbos is that, you know, Yaakov's longing for Rachel colors his entire life, right? Because that gets transferred to Yosef when Rachel dies, and then when Yosef is taken away, that longing gets transferred to Binyamin, and in many ways Yaakov gets he's limited by this, you know, by the longing of this relationship. You know, he can't let Binyamin go. He can't let him go with the brothers. His overprotection is so obvious to everybody. And the way he looks at Yosef and Binyamin differently than how he looks at the other brothers is also very obvious to the brothers. And that's what leads to Yosef. So we'll get to that. I don't want to jump ahead. But anyway, this is something that goes his entire life. So what does the longing come from? So a few things I was thinking about. So let's go to the text and see if we can get any clues. Let's start on page 149. Verse 4. Jacob said to them, "My brothers, where are you from?" These are these guys hanging out by the well. Remember, the well is always a prominent place for all these relationships to take place. Where are you from? And they said, "We're from Haran." He said, "Do you know Lavan, son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know." Then he said to them, "Is it well with him?" They answered, "It is well." And see, his daughter Rachel, Rachel, is coming with the flock. He said, "Look, the day is still long. It is not yet time to bring the livestock in. Water the flock and go on grazing." But they said, "We'll be unable to until all the flocks will have been gathered, and they'll roll the stone off the mouth of the well. We will then water the flock. It's too heavy. We need everyone to be here to do it together." While he was still speaking with them, Rachel had arrived with her father's flock, for she was a shepherdess. And it was when Yaakov saw Rachel, daughter of Lavan, his mother's brother, and the flock of Lavan, his mother's brother, Yaakov came forward and rolled the stone off the mouth of the well and watered the sheep of Lavan, his mother's brother. Then Yaakov kissed Rachel, and he raised his voice and wept. Yaakov told Rachel that he was her father's relative, and that he was Rivka's son. Then she ran and told her father. Okay. So this is their encounter. There's not a lot here, right, to impress Yaakov or to speak to Yaakov. What do we have here? What information does Yaakov have that so enamors him?
Well, why does he say he's her father's relative? Because he's her relative. They're cousins, are they not?
They're cousins. So Rachel's father is...
I understand that, but why does he say, I'm your relative, I'm your cousin? Why?
Oh. Yaakov was told that he was her father's relative. Maybe related through the father's side. That's what it means.
Well, his mother...
It's
a sister.
Yeah, it means I'm a relative of your father. Relative through your father, you might want to say. Through your father's side. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, is there something going on in between? I mean, it seems like it's going on. It goes very fast. He meets her and he kisses her.
He meets her and he's in love with her. Right?
But there must be something.
Love at first sight.
So is there any precedence to this in the Torah? Love at first sight. So there is.
Okay.
What?
Adom and
Hava. Who?
Adom and
Hava. No, never. That's not love. That's.
I don't know if it's love but wanting. Like Pharaoh wanted Sarah.
like lust.
Yeah.
I think it's more lust than love. I mean, the word love is used here a couple times. You'll see if you go on a little further. It doesn't say he loves her yet. Did he say he loves her yet? Mm-hmm. So if you go on a little bit longer.
I think we all do, right?
So here, go to verse 18. Turn the page and go to verse 18.
Sometimes it does.
So
particularly if that person doesn't reciprocate the way you do.
But then it's not love. Well, that's longing. Right, that's right. That's longing. Right. Right. So Yaakov loved Rachel. So he said, I'll work for you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter. Right? And it should be noted that that this is Yaakov's idea to work for 7 years for her. This is not Laban's idea.
No.
Right? Because Yaakov comes with nothing. Uh-huh. And he says, well, how are you going to take care of my daughter? How is this going to work out?
Right.
You want me to take you in? What are your wages going to be? Says, don't pay me anything. I'll work for you for 7 years, and then the deal is, then I'll marry your daughter.
Why did he choose that number? I mean, was there a reason?
Go with 6 months or something, right?
Yeah, right. 2 weeks,
or even a year,
or 7 days.
Yeah, not the best negotiator, right?
Well, we see that all along.
He's not the best negotiator.
Yeah, you're right.
Play ahead, we guys. That's interesting.
Here, the chicane.
Can you see her? I didn't see her yet, you guys.
Number 9.
Yeah, I'm not sure why he says 7 years. It's a good question. I'm not sure.
Isn't 7 one of those numbers that's repeated a lot?
Yeah, but it doesn't mean it has to work that long.
He's not very worldly.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure why he
or something like that. I mean.
I don't know. Is he just? But he's not. He's tricking himself. I'm saying he's not even. He's not even taking a bad deal. He's offering a bad deal. I don't know. Some say maybe she was young.
Rachel was really a flirt.
What?
She sounds like she's young, very young.
Rachel.
Uh-huh.
Why does it say she's a flirt?
Because the father wasn't worried about her working in the fields with the shepherd boys, when he was worried about Leah because she was older.
Right.
No, but Leah, you heard why she was. Because she had weak eyes.
Oh, so we talked about that last week. Does that mean she wasn't beautiful or not? So some of the commentaries say she once she cried a lot because she thought she'd be married to Esav because they were the two oldest ones. Right, but some of the commentaries say this means she was ugly. It just means that she had tender eyes, she had sensitive eyes, she's sensitive maybe. Your glasses, right? So it doesn't necessarily mean she was ugly. It might mean she just had a different look. So not everyone takes it to mean that she was ugly. That's not really the common approach.
But it's sparkling.
That's
right. Maybe, yeah. So maybe she's a little quieter. She's not as dynamic.
She's got a good personality.
No, but... you know, so...
She sounds like it's a retiring personality.
No, but this Rachel, she's...
Why do you say she's a flirt?
Here. Rachel, however, was still too young to arouse the interest.
That's all I'm saying.
Where are you? What verse?
He was just worried because she was young.
Yeah, so she was definitely young. That's how young
so
is a question.
Waiting until she would be of an age to be able to bear children.
But at the same time, she was, you know, schlepping a whole flock with her. So that can't be easy. You know, she couldn't have been too young. And her parents, Yaakov is 60 years old when he leaves Haran. When he leaves Canaan to go to Haran. So,
oh
my God, he was really old.
Yeah, he was
I'm
much
not
older.
That old.
How old is he? 60?
Well, if you're talking 60. About marrying a 20-year-old or a 15-year-old.
Lavan and Rivka are brother and sister, so we assume they're roughly the same age. So how could, you know, what is the age gap between them? It's hard to imagine it's that big of an age gap, but maybe
he was 60 when he left, and it was 14 years plus an additional 7, 21 years, so he was like 39.
What do you mean? No, 60 when he got there.
Oh, when he
60
got
when he leaves Israel.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he just didn't have a really strong drive.
I don't know. So.
Ooh. Yaakov didn't have a strong drive.
Maybe.
I don't know. So it's not so clear exactly
what he used to say about Yaakov. Oh, God. Okay.
But we're looking for another example here. So let's go to the end of Parsha Chayisara. Page.
Help us out.
Yeah, 1 second. Page 121. So this is after Rivka, after Rebecca decides to join Eliezer and go to marry Yitzchak. So this is how the Torah describes it. Go to the top of 121, verse 63. Yitzchak went out to supplicate in the field towards evening, and he raised his eyes and saw, behold, camels were coming. And Rivka raised her eyes and saw Yitzchak. She inclined well upon the camel, and she said to the servant, who is that man walking in the field toward us? And the servant said, he is my master. I mean, that's Yitzchak. She then took the veil and covered herself. The servant told Yitzchak all the things he had done, about, you know, this whole episode with the camels and the whole thing. And Yitzchak brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother. He married Rivka, she became his wife, and he loved her. And thus was Yitzchak consoled after his mother. So here's the first reference that he loved her. It seems that he loves her quickly. This is actually the first time the Torah uses this word love. Is between Yitzchak and Rivka. First time the Torah uses it. Doesn't use it by Sarah and Avram. Doesn't use it by Adam and Chava. Doesn't use it by anybody else. This is the first time it's used. So, there is an element of love at first sight, it seems. And although it does say he married her and then he loved her. Yeah. So maybe...
Maybe they got married right away.
Yeah. Right, so maybe they got married. It's unclear exactly like what this process is. But it seems he loves her pretty quickly. Right? He's comforted very quickly from his mother's death with her arrival. So there could be an element, you know, and what I was thinking of is when Yaakov is coming to Haran to, you know, to find a wife. So what is his mindset? So I'm thinking he might be comparing his situation to his father's situation, right? I mean, in some ways they're very similar, right? Abraham sends Eliezer to find the wife for Yitzchak. He goes to the same town of Haran to go to meet the same family, right? It's the same group. This is the same, in some ways, this is the same story repeating itself. The only difference is this is Yaakov going himself instead of with an intermediary.
Without gifts, because he gets
robbed. Right, so the biggest difference is that Yaakov is poor when he arrives and Eliezer comes with riches to kind of, impress them. But the same, so in some ways, and a part of this is, you know, Eliezer finding Rivka was a miraculous moment, right? The story plays out in a very miraculous way. Here you have, Eliezer has this specific way he's going to find her, she's going to be so impressive, it happens right away, it happens at the well, and you can imagine Yaakov are coming to Haran waiting for that moment, right? Waiting for the moment that brought his parents together, right? You know, how often do kids hear about the story of the parents meeting, right? Over the course of their childhood, how many times? Thousands of times, right? They always hear about the story of your parents meeting, how they met, when they met, you know, all the stuff. Everyone comes over, meets them for the first time, asks them about it. You know, at some point the kids get sick of the story, right? They always get sick of the story. So how many times did Yaakov hear about the story of the camels growing up? How many times did he heard about it?
We know probably at least once.
Right? You think this is like a very prominent story, you know, and this is part of the family lore, right? This is a part of what makes the relationship special. This is Hashem picked out Yitzchak's wife, right? Hashem made sure that Yitzchak met the right woman for the sake of the future of the Jewish people, right? So Yaakov's not just looking for a wife. He's looking for that moment. He's looking for the inspiration. He's looking, you know, for the wow factor. He's looking for the moment when he's not just finding the person he's going to marry. He's finding a message. He's looking for a message from God that, okay, here you go, Yaakov.
This is it.
Now you start building the nation yourself. Right?
Well, that's where we get that beshert. I mean, there is a beshert for everybody, right?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't come from this story per se,
But
this is more than just beshert. But that's my point. This is more than just about the beshert.
This is destiny.
Right? This is destiny. This is not just Yaakov and Rachel's relationship. This is Yaakov as, leader of the Jewish people.
Well,
right?
I think Yaakov had heard the story of his parents at the well and how they met and da-da-da-da, and then he met Rachel at the well, and he was like, it's destiny. And it's
exactly,
meant to be,
exactly. So it could be that what gets him so excited is not so much her per se, it's the moment of her being there, right? Yeah. She happens to be at the well when he arrives. Yeah. Just like Rivka happened to be at the well.
Yeah.
Right?
She was there and then she...
Well, I'm saying she arrives very quickly, right? Yeah. He asks the people at the well, do you know Lavan, right? Oh yeah, we know the guy. Oh, there's his daughter, right? It just works out too well. And you can imagine Yaakov was waiting for this moment. And when it happens, he clings to it, right? Because he's been promised by Hashem, I'll build multitudes through you. And he stuck out his neck literally to get the bracha, and he takes it away from Esav. And he's doing all this because he's seeing himself as now the heir of the Jewish nation. He is the next patriarch of the Jewish nation. And so Rachel doesn't only represent Rachel. She represents his role in this world,
right?
Hashem's message to him.
Right.
And so I think that's a big part of this, is he's always clinging to this moment. He's always clinging to this moment, because that's kind of his inspiration throughout. Mm-hmm. And
so as much as he loves her, he sort of, if you peel away that layer, his love is actually, the love of Hashem and for the plan and, for him, desperately wanting that to be, what was destined for him.
Exactly. Right. So right.
That's it.
So this is more than just about his love and attraction for her. This is about God's plan for me, for my life, for my future, for my legacy, for everything that I, that I want to be and have promised that I will be. So when he sees Rachel, that's what he sees. And that can last forever.
Yes.
Right? That will last forever. That is his entire life. That is his entire being. So I think that's
and
big...
And that's why this, her
that's
son is
pretty
so
good.
Important.
Now I'm
exactly.
To like him.
Right.
Oh, okay. I like that. Very good.
And so, exactly, and that's why her sons are a direct reflection of this, because they're a link in that chain. They're a part of this. And, it seems to me, this is my perspective, that Yaakov does this a lot. Yaakov does this a lot. Yaakov is really trying to understand God's plan for him. And every time he seems like he's got to figure it out, something goes terribly wrong. Right? Every single time. And it's almost like Yaakov keeps getting taught the lesson, stop trying to figure it out so much, right? Try to figure it out, but realize Hashem's plan might not be exactly what you think it's going to be. So right from the beginning, right? Perfect. I meet Rachel. It worked out just like I had hoped. She's at the well.
Just like my father,
just like my mother. This could have worked out better. Oh, here's Lavan. Lavan was there the last time with my father and mother, oh, perfect, this is, this is exactly the same thing coming to fruition. And then he gets Leah. And the moment that happens, that smacks him across the face, right? Because Leah is now Leah is not just the woman who didn't want to marry. Leah is the one who, he could say to himself, ruined the whole plan. The perfection of the plan, the beauty of the destiny. Right?
But really, it was Rachel that ruined. Because if she hadn't given the hand signal,
she hadn't
gone to extra lengths.
No, you're right. No, you're right.
Sure, he didn't know. He would have known.
You're right. Okay, you're right.
Before they,
she didn't want to humiliate her sister.
Yeah, but
still, if you really want the guy.
Yeah, but at the same time, who knows? Yeah,
of your sister, are that important?
Who knows how that would play out? And I don't know.
I think I might not have been so generous.
Okay, but that,
I wanted him.
It's not so simple, but...
Oh, six of one, half a dozen of the other. I don't want my sister to be hurt.
But here's the question.
What?
Let's
people were very high up.
I mean, play it out for a second. Let's say Yaakov figures out the ruse, okay? And figures out that Leah and not Rachel. So I'm not doing it. What happens next? Does Yaakov end up marrying Rachel?
He could.
Maybe. Maybe you know, not.
He could confront Laban while Laban is still a virgin.
And what's Laban going to do? He's going to just give in?
No.
He'll say, take it or leave it.
I just love the way, like, he didn't realize until after he'd slept with her that it was It's like, whoops, sorry, I didn't realize.
These things happen.
I love it.
With Leia. You mean with Leia?
Yeah.
That's why we
people drink a lot of weddings. What can you do?
Well, that, but she kept the veil. I mean, what did she keep the veil on? I mean,
it's a good, it's a good question. Everybody asks it. Everybody wants to know. Nobody has a good answer. I don't know. We all have our own little answer. We can all, we can all think of, we can all come up with our own answer to that question.
Everybody's alike in the dark.
Yeah. So in some ways, though, I think you have to, to be fair, I think you have to realize that Rachel was in a no-win situation, too, and Yaakov was also. That if Laban is this kind of guy, the odds that he's going to just... you got me. I was tricking you, got me. All right, go marry Rachel. Sorry about that. That's not going to happen, right?
No.
He's going to say, you marry Leia or else, right? And if you think about it, for Leia's well-being and for Yaakov's well-being, what's better? Is it better that it happens this way? Or that it's a commandment down from Laban, Yaakov, you can get married to her or else. I don't want to, but you have to. Fine, I'll do it. That's much worse.
That doesn't bode well.
That's much worse, right? Yeah. So in a certain sense, what Rachel does, it's selfless, but there is a certain amount of self-protection to it, too.
Yeah,
it
she
is,
doesn't want to marry Esau.
Besides the Esau thing, I'm saying in the long run, it's better in a weird way. If she wants to marry Yaakov, she has to do this. If she wants to marry Yaakov, or at least in a way that won't be as destructive, this is a lesser of two evils in the end for her. So it's very smart. But it's not purely selfless in that regard, I think. Okay, anyway.
Still Hashem's plan.
Right, so that's the point. Right.
10 of the 12 tribes came from her and her maids. Or?
And Eight of the 12 tribes.
I thought it was 10.
Because Rachel has her own maidservant who has two.
Bilha, yeah.
Right. So, in the end, Leah is part of God's plan, right? I mean, it's not.
Yeah.
We can't assume that Leah is not part of God's plan, but it's not something that Yaakov anticipates. And Yaakov really seems to struggle a bit when he gets thrown these curveballs, and he gets thrown a lot of curveballs. So, right from the beginning, so this complicates this relationship. So, Yaakov's relationship with Leah and Rachel is not just about attraction and personality and chemistry, that kind of stuff. I'm sure it's a part of it. But it's much bigger for him, right? Leah and Rachel know this on some level, but they don't have the same intensity as Yaakov does, right? They understand this, right? Because they're very cognizant of the fact that their children are going to be part of building the 12 tribes. So that's a big part of it for them. But for Yaakov, this is his very being. And so Leah, it takes him time to realize that she's part of God's plan too, even if that's not what he thought it was going to be. If that's, and I think that's a big part of this whole process of his relationships. So he might have just put too much stock in Rachel, and that could have been really what this is. He was maybe looking for that moment and looking for that destiny, and Rachel is part of his destiny, but maybe not to the extent that he thought she was, and he never seems to be able to really transition fully from that. okay.
Which is weird when you think about it, because like you said, if it was Hashem's plan, and Yaakov would have recognized that was what was meant to happen.
So this happens a lot to Yaakov, okay? This happens a lot to him.
No, he doesn't seem to have such clear vision about...
Well, no, he almost has too clear a vision,
perfect.
You know? Sorry?
He has to have everything perfect the first time, it sounds like.
He seems to have an understanding of how things are going to play out. When he loses your... What? Okay. Karen, present trouble here?
No.
Right.
You don't mention it, because
no,
we have...
Just go. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I learned to keep my mouth shut. Okay.
No, we like feedback here.
It's interesting, though, Karen. The rabbi, he doesn't mind your saying it.
No, I just said, because Bertie said everything has to be perfect. I said maybe he has OCD. That's all I said.
Well, who knows? and you have to be prayed over and over again. I don't
think it's quite that. I don't know how it would apply to like counting tiles on the wall, but and making sure everything is straight and perfect.
Well, there were some differences that he didn't take into account. One, Itzhak did not come. Eliezer came as as a servant of Abraham. Two, he arrived with money. I mean, the equivalent of money. Lots of gifts, gold and silver, etc. So that it wasn't an exact parallel.
No, for sure. It was definitely not
to make it an exact parallel.
It was not an exact parallel, but it could be enough similarities. There are a lot of similarities
there
too. That Yaakov could say, this is my moment. My father, his moment, it was different. This is my moment. But again, we see this when Yosef is taken away. Right? He doesn't get over it. I mean, for the 22 years that Yosef's taken away, Yaakov can't get prophecy. There's a distance between him and God. It's the same problem. He has trouble seeing it. Seeing how this can be part of God's plan. And then when he finds out that Yosef is alive, but he's in Egypt, and the whole family is supposed to move there, he struggles again, right? Because we're supposed to build this nation in Israel. I brought my family to Israel. Why would we go to Egypt? That seems so odd to him.
To have food.
No, I know, but yeah. But why would God make this happen? Why would God make a famine?
Oh, he's constantly questioning Hashem.
You know, and yeah, so internally he's doing that for sure. For sure. And even and when Rachel can't have children, right? It doesn't make sense to him also. The whole plan was that he and Rachel would build this nation, and Leah's having kids left and right, and Rachel can't. And that doesn't make sense to him. Until Yosef is born, he doesn't understand God's plan. So this happens quite a bit, and we can see a little bit in the commentaries how they say this pretty explicitly, that this is what's going on.
And his children finally come to understand. Takes them a long time.
Yeah, if they ever do. Yeah. Well, even earlier in life, yeah, does Yaakov really understand why his father favors Esav? Why his father wants to give Esav the bracha? Why he has to steal it when he thinks it should be pretty clear it should go to him? Right? You know, in some ways his entire life, Yaakov is always trying to, you know, like it should be easier for me, it should work better. He always wants, you know, he's got this vision in his mind, and it just never plays out exactly like he wants. And when it doesn't, he struggles with that. He struggles with that.
I think that's like a very modern day you see lots of people doing that sort of in the modern day as well.
Sure.
They get an idea and they start a business and they're determined it's going to work. They put everything into it and, you know, it just doesn't match the vision. I think that's see that today as well.
It's everything. It's relationships. It's life as a whole.
Yeah.
Right? We think life is supposed to play out a certain way. We have a vision in our heads and
yes.
How things are supposed to play out. And when they so when they don't, some people are better than others at readapting and some aren't.
You're looking at one that isn't.
You're not adapting well?
Not adapting well.
You're still going at it.
So. But your hair still looks amazing.
My head.
No one would ever know. Your hair.
Hair.
The joys of a good shave.
It's only the hair.
Okay.
That never happens in my men's stomach class. Comments on hair. Never happens.
About the hair?
Never happens. We never comment on each other's hair. It's never happened. In all my years. So I think this is an important, you know, kind of starting point. And we see it's interesting when Rashi has some comments here. You know, when he says that Yaakov sees Rachel and he cries, so why does he cry? So Rashi says he cries. Sorry. Page 148 and 149. So it says, and verse 11, Yud Aleph, Yaakov Rachel v'yisa'et kolo v'yev. So Yaakov kisses Rachel and he raises his voice and he weeps. So why does he cry? So Rashi says, Lefi shetzafach baruch hakodesh she'ena nesed nimolu kvura. So he cries because he sees they won't be buried together through prophecy. That's the first answer. Another, the Rachel v'shibah be'adim reikanias. The second reason he cries is he's upset that he has nothing to give her. like he's empty-handed. His father was able to, Eliezer provided all these gifts, and he doesn't have anything. He feels bad about it, so he cries. Amar Eliezer Eved Avi Abba Hayu Biyadav Nizam Smidim. My Eliezer came here with all these gifts, and to give Rivka, and I've got nothing. Right?
Does he feel bad about it? Or maybe he cries because, his father had to give loads of gifts in order to get his mother, but Rachel just, has fallen in love with him or whatever.
Doesn't say she falls in love with him.
Well, she likes him.
She acquiesces.
She likes him regardless of his wealth, and he cries because he's so happy about it.
Yeah, okay. Okay. I mean, she hasn't agreed to marry him yet.
It says it right here. Another reason he wept was because he can't have
the children. Yeah, but this is...
Yeah, that's Rashi. Yeah, so Rashi... But I think both of those answers are insightful. And Rashi, number one, we see the way he's looking at Rachel. He's thinking about their... He's thinking about their burial places. Yeah, he's speaking out plots on the first date. That's a bit much. Right?
Well, you said he had a plan.
Yeah, but no, that's the... Well, that's the point, right? Yaakov was looking
about it.
What?
It's prophecy. You can't bring prophecy on.
No, that's true. But that's part of when Yaakov is seeing Rachel, he's seeing their life together. He's seeing their future together.
Wow.
So that's going out. Don't talk about plus on the first date. Not a good idea.
Can you imagine your first date? So yeah. Where do you want to be buried?
Your family, my family.
And what's your favorite food?
We have a family plot in New Jersey. If you're interested in coming to see it, maybe on the second date we can go there. Yeah. But the second answer is also interesting. Why is he crying? He's crying because he's comparing his experience to the Eliezer experience, right? Why is he doing that? Because in his mind, that's what this is.
Yeah.
This is his moment, and he's crying. And you're pointing out the differences, and he's upset about the differences, right? This is not happening with the same fanfare and excitement, right? When Eliezer arrived, it was exciting, and there was gifts and jewelry and all this stuff, and Yaakov comes in, and he's the Nebuch guy, right? He's got no money, he's got no job. Can I work for you? I'll wash dishes. It's not as exciting. It's not as exciting. If anything, he needs their favor.
What would a study win for?
Right. So, but Yaakov, he wants a different moment. Okay, so this kind of plays out throughout their life. And then the next time this comes up, let's go to page 153. chapter 30. Rachel saw that she had not borne children to Yaakov, so Rachel became envious of her sister.
What verse is this?
1. Chapter 30, verse 1.
Rachel
saw that she had not born children to Yaakov, so Rachel became envious of her sister, right? So now, to this point, Leah was always jealous of Rachel, and now the tables are turned, right? Because Leah is able to have children and Rachel is not. She said to Yaakov, "Give me children, otherwise I am dead." A very, very intense statement. Jacob's anger flared up at Rachel, and he said, "If am I instead of God, who has withheld from you fruits of the womb?" She said, "Here's my maid Bilhah, consort with her, that she may bear upon my knees, and I too may build up through her." Okay, a very strange 3 psukim here. And then that happens, 4, 5, and 6, Yaakov consorts with Bilhah.
Yes.
What?
They're so quick to give their maid servants.
I mean,
one thing that goes wrong...
Take your maid servant. Exactly.
I don't know.
I'm having a bad day. Take the maid servant.
It seems to me that you have faith in Hashem and wait it out. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting. But what's interesting is, Rachel has the, Bilhah has 2 kids, right? Dan and Naphtali. And then Leah does the same thing. She stops giving birth, and she gives Zilpah to Yaakov. And they have two kids, Gad and Asher. And then soon after that, Rachel is able to have children. So it seems like there's some sort of link here, but it's a weird conversation. So Yaakov, Rachel screams at Yaakov, right? In my head, she's screaming. I don't know if she really does. Give me children, otherwise I am dead. Okay?
Right. Yeah, Rabbi, you could say that.
Right?
Well,
I don't know if she literally screams.
She could have been crying.
She is drama. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's...
Well, she's obviously jealous as well, isn't she?
So, right.
You know, she's kind of feeling that, you know, she's watching everyone else have kids and her sister having loads of kids, and she's probably, like, a bit of drama there.
But for sure, yeah, she's...
But how will that... I don't understand. How will that satisfy her by having the maidservant?
Ah, very good question. Good. So it's an interesting reaction. So the flow is, she says to Yaakov, give me children.
Right.
Then Yaakov says, am I instead of God who has withheld from you from the womb? He's like, you're asking the wrong guy, right? Ask God. And Yaakov's further point is, maybe the problem's not with me, the problem's with you. Because I have kids already, right? Uh-huh, I have kids with Leah. He already had four kids. So, obviously, God's not withholding kids from me. Hashem's holding kids from you, and you've got to figure out why. And you've got to daven for it, right?
Just like all the other matriarchs.
Right, like all the matriarchs, right?
Except for Leah.
And this is a big part of the matriarchs, is that they all struggle to have kids. Now, it's hard to apply this to, you know, anybody else but them, right? That God withholds children as a means of, you know, punishment or faith. Yeah, I mean, these are not your typical circumstances. But it seems that is the common thread, right? That's what happens when Rivka can't have children, so they daven, and she has kids, and that's the story of Hannah. She can't have children, and she davens very intensely, and then she has kids. So it seems that there's something here that Yaakov understands you need to work on. And the reaction is, okay, take Bilha. And again, it's the same kind of idea that we see that Sarah tries to do with Hagar.
Right.
Right? The way it's even put. Take my maid Bilha, consort with her, that she may bear upon my knees, and I too may be built up through her. Right? Again, it's like a surrogate motherhood.
Yes.
Right? It's not really... marry somebody else, it's more like a surrogate.
Yes.
Right? Or an adoption of sorts.
Yeah.
She'll give the kids and I'll raise them. Right? Because let's see how this plays out. So verse 4. So she gave him Bilha, her maidservant, as a wife, and Jacob consorted with her. Bilha conceived a boy, Jacob, a son. Then Rachel said, God has judged me. He has also heard my voice and has given me a son. Uh-huh. She therefore called his name Dan. This is her son and she gives his name. Okay? Bilha's, Rachel's maidservant, conceived again and bore Yaakov a second son. And Rachel said, sacred schemes have I maneuvered to equal my sister. Again, what does that mean? And I have also prevailed. And she called his name Naphtali. Right? So here now, I mean, we see a lot in these names when it comes to Rachel's mindset. First of all, she's comparing herself to her sister, you know, still.
Yeah.
You know? Why is that necessary?
Sad.
Second.
Jacob was really busy
with all the
maids. Why didn't we talk about this before? Because that's what Karen and I used to discuss this all the time.
No, the leaking.
What?
There's water is leaking.
Why is it leaking?
In the picture?
Yeah.
Oh.
And this is wood. Yeah, that's good.
Okay. So it seems that by doing this, she's showing a certain amount of selflessness, right? She's showing that her desire to have children is not for her, it's for the purpose of growing the Jewish people, right? And there is a message here to Yaakov as well, right? And that's what's interesting. You know, Yaakov says to Rachel, it's your problem, but maybe not. Maybe it's their problem, right? Because Yaakov is so dead set on having kids with Rachel, and maybe this is a message to him as well, that it can happen in other ways. It can happen beyond you. This is, you know,
that's good.
You've got to open up your minds. This is about building Jewish people, and it might not just be between you and Rachel.
He's so very busy for a man in his 60s.
Karen, that's good, because that's what's happening now, right?
Wasn't no, but I mean, really, look at all these kids.
Rabbi, wasn't there a big... Really
how much is he raising them? What?
Wasn't there a big discussion just recently about surrogate mother... This is, you know, medicine or what.
What about it?
Mothers nowadays, you know, giving birth, all these different methods.
Yeah.
Wasn't it okayed?
From Jewish law, you mean?
From Jewish law.
Oh.
I think it depends.
Yeah, it's complicated. I mean, people do it all the time. It just gets complicated with the status of the child.
But discussing it.
Oh, this has been going on for years.
Surrogates
are complicated if it's another woman's egg and...
No. I'm talking the
married couple, and they do something like in vitro or something.
What? In vitro. That's
something different.
Yeah, but that's been going on forever. Not forever, but for decades already.
Yeah, and that's okay because it's
married
woman's.
So what I'm saying is this has been going on for.
In a certain sense, yeah, you can say it's been going on forever. But you know, this is obviously not Rachel's egg or anything, but.
But maybe she looked at Sarah and Abraham and thought, well, that's what she did, and then she ended up having a child. So if I do the same, maybe
it could be.
The same will happen to me.
It could be. There could be an element of that. Yeah, and I'm sure that's part of the family lore as well, right? That's a part of what they... It could be. And Leah does the same thing, so that... But this works better. Hagar ends up kind of blowing up in their face. But one thing that happens that Bilhah is always seen as an extension of Rachel. And, you know, after Rachel dies, so who does Yaakov move in with? Bilhah.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's what Rashi says. That's Reuven was very upset after Rachel dies that...
So why does he move?
Because Bilhah is an extension of Rachel.
Oh.
Bilhah is his link to Rachel.
And she probably acted as mother to the children.
Exactly. Bilhah becomes Yosef's and Binyamin's mother. And this even comes up at the end of the end of this whole story.
Very complicated.
Yes, very,
very complicated.
Well,
but you know what? Bottom line, Rabbi, the woman, everything is really up to the woman has to pray a lot. Pray for the Jewish people. They've got to think before they do things. They've got to educate their children. There's a lot. And if they don't do it, then we have tzuras. You know, if they don't
educate... Particularly the education.
The education, they don't do it, there's tzuras. There's problems.
But the mothers also have responsibility in education. Yeah, but the mother's there from the little baby, you know. Depends on the father. I'm sure that the rabbi is very much involved in the education of his children. He's holding his son there on Shabbos.
So this relationship between Bilhah and Rachel really lasts, and Yosef ends up viewing... Yosef is closer to the sons of Bilhah than to the other, because it's almost like it's, you know...
Well, yeah, because...
In some ways, his closer relatives...
They took him in. Them. I mean, the other...
Right, that's also true. Even before that, it seems that he's closer with them. With them. I think... One second.
Mm-hmm. So, when he moved in with her, what happened with Leah?
Oh, so the story that the Rashi tells is that... There's a weird allusion after Rachel dies to this episode.
It's a very strange allusion.
Yeah, let's see inside.
His mother's bed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So if you go to page...
What?
Here, if you go to page 191. Just look at it inside since I already mentioned that.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it says here, verse 21, Israel journeyed on, and he pitched his tent beyond Migdal Eder, and it came to pass while Israel dwelt in the land that Reuven went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard. So the text seems to imply that Reuven slept with her.
Yes. I would say.
Yeah. That's what it says. So Rashi gave a different interpretation. If you look here,
is Reuben his Leah's son, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the oldest, yeah.
So that's pretty weird.
Okay, so if you look at the note here on the bottom, 22 to 26, Reuben's error and partial vindication. After Rachel's death, Jacob established primary residence in the tent of Bilhah, Rachel's maidservant. Reuben considered this an affront to his mother Leah, saying, if my mother's sister Rachel was my mother's rival, should the handmaid of my mother's sister now be my mother's rival? Like, now you're choosing her? To defend his mother's honor, Reuven took it upon himself to move Jacob's bed to Leah's tent. This is all that transpired. That's what the Talmud says.
But that's not the simple shot of the story.
No, that's not the simple... Right. That's not.
How he laid with Bilhah.
Yeah. So I mean, it doesn't mean he laid with her. It means that he messed with his father's relationship. Keep going to the next paragraph. Jacob moved to Bilhah's tent to honor Rachel's memory because he had labored 14 years for the right to marry her. And she'd been the mainstay of his household. In tribute to her, he assigned this honor to her loyal maidservant, for even after Bilhah's marriage to Yaakov, Bilhah continued to serve Rachel loyally. It may also be that Yaakov did so because Bilhah was raising the 8-year-old Joseph and the infant Benjamin, who were not only his youngest children, but the only survivors of his most beloved wife. So maybe it's not just because of Bilhah, but he's moving in there because he wants to be around the youngest and be there for the youngest as well, whose mother just died. So maybe they needed a little extra attention, maybe they need to their father more at that time, and so he wants to be around the family more because of that, which is also pretty understandable.
In 22 it says Reuben did nothing more than tamper with his father's bed. What the heck does that mean?
Meaning Yaakov had each of the wives had their own tent where they slept, and Yaakov would make the rounds, but
I said he was busy for a man in his 60s and 70s.
Kind of like sister wives. Have you seen sister
Yeah, you're right.
I did not know what sister wives.
Family. Where were they living in? They were in Nevada now. Basically,
like Mormons?
Mormon.
Like Big Love?
Yeah, he's married to like 4 women, and he's got like about 26 children or something ridiculous.
Is it HBO show Big Love?
They were living.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. They were living in Utah.
It's a drama or it's like a reality show?
It's a reality
show. Oh, it's a reality show.
They had to move from Utah to Nevada because the police were investigating.
Well, I thought Utah you could get away with it.
Well, they changed the law.
Now they won't go on national TV.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right. It gets harder.
No, and I don't think the Mormons allow that anymore.
No, it's wink, wink. From what I hear, it's on the books. You can't do it, but they don't really enforce it.
Yes, they do.
In the main church. But then there are splinters.
Yeah, this is church.
Is it legal in Nevada?
Anything's legal in Nevada.
Anything is legal.
What's not legal in Nevada?
I don't know. He don't look happy. He's not happy. He looks tortured.
You're right.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Well, this is why the rabbis ruled that a man, could not marry two sisters. And later, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi said he couldn't have two wives.
Wait, these are real sisters in this show?
No, they're not. They call them sisters.
They're not real sisters.
No, they call each other.
Well, they're like sisters. So they all live together.
Right. They have a lot in common.
And they
don't have separate.
But it's brilliant,
tents.
Though. Like, the first woman separate married, rooms. Like, they show a picture of her when they first got married, and now she's, like, 60 stone and, like, not looking her best, and now he's married.
What's 60 stone?
Like, fat. And now he's married to, like, this new, like, younger woman, and she's getting all the attention, and the other wives are jealous. It's brilliant.
They're jealous.
Shocking.
They're fat too.
They've let themselves. That's what happens, For a little bit,
there's nothing else on, so I watched that.
When you're ironing, it's
really
read
a good book.
All right. So, just to finish up. So, So that's what happened. So Yaakov had like his primary residence in Rachel's tent. And we saw that story, the flowers, remember, a couple weeks ago?
The Duwadim, right?
Where Rachel like sells Yaakov's
services
to Leah. So we see that he primarily lived in Rachel's tent. So now he moves that primary residence to Bilhah. And so that's where Reuven bothers Reuven. But it's a complicated situation because of all the reasons that we said. So anyway, I think that's kind of what's going on here with Yaakov and Rachel, and like we said, there's a tragic element of this relationship, that it never lives up to what Yaakov hopes it's going to be. There's a longing for this relationship, both for her and what it represents, and what he thinks is going to happen. And as we said last time, ultimately, it's not really Rachel's children that form the bedrock of the Jewish people. It's Leah's, right? It's really Leah's. Right. Besides the fact that they're half the tribes, mm-hmm. And then with her, and then you add in the two other, Zilpah's two kids. Now you have, three-fourths, right? Two-thirds. Yeah, two-thirds of the kids. But it's Yehuda and it's Levi. So it's all the major tribes, and pretty much, some of the most prominent people. Yeah, that's Moshe and Aaron are coming, and all the Kohanim and Levium. Then we've got David and the Davidic line is coming through Yehuda. So, and Rachel's kids are always kind of outsiders, The tribes that have the hardest time working with others are really Ephraim and Benjamin. Those are the ones that struggle the most. And the civil wars and the major fights that happen in the times of the prophets are usually involving them.
Didn't Benjamin merit to have the temple in his territory?
So the temple is shared between Benjamin and Judah's territory. Yeah. So for sure they kind of the lineage of Yosef, of Rachel and Leah share the temple site. Right.
Which is interesting if you think about.
Yeah, no.
So we're talking about building the future of the Jewish people.
Right, it's a good point. And ultimately it's shared, Hashem doesn't choose one another. They share the plot. But these two tribes, Binyamin and Ephraim, the most difficult stories in Tanakh involved in the two tribes. I mean, Binyamin was almost kicked out. They almost annexed Binyamin. There was almost a civil war where they wiped out Binyamin.
The tribe of Benjamin
later on, right? And Ephraim gets into trouble over and over again. And also they at times want to go to war with Ephraim, the other tribe. So it kind of remains, separate and apart. And Yosef is separate and apart, and Benjamin is separate and apart. They're not really part of the rest of the family. It's almost like the other family to a certain extent. Okay, we'll stop here.
Great.
We'll pick up.
I think there's a reason why the Bible.